If you got your Bibles, open them to Matthew chapter 5. Matthew chapter 5. In our Sunday school class in the teens, we're going through the Beatitudes. And God's been working on me and just kind of, I've been feeling a need to talk about biblical purity for a while, especially within our youth group and especially to parents. You know, purity is something that it's kind of a scary thing to talk about, and it's an uncomfortable thing to talk about. In fact, the week that we went through this in Sunday school, I had three first-time visitors, and I was like, really? Come on, like it's a difficult topic to really talk about, especially with students. And then, especially with students that you're not familiar with, it gets all the more uncomfortable. So God's just been working on me, and I really felt a need to kind of transition this or take this into this kind of setting, because I can talk to your students all I want about purity, but if there's no backup at home, if there's no plan at home to make this happen, then unfortunately we're not going to see success in this. So Matthew chapter 5 and verse 8, blessed are the pure in heart, for they shall see God. Let's go ahead and pray. Lord, I thank you for allowing us to be here this morning. I thank you for the opportunity to present your word. And Lord, I pray that you would help us to allow it to change our lives and help us as we try to influence and lead in our next generation. I love you, Lord. In your name, amen. Some of you may be familiar with this, but growing up in my generation, we had something that's called purity conferences. Anybody familiar with those? Some of you? All right. These were well-intentioned efforts to kind of enforce and to create a culture and an atmosphere amongst the teen generation or the millennial generation to be pure. And they would use, again, well-intentioned, they would use illustrations like a paper heart that they tore up and they said, now it's not worth anything. Or they'd hold up a cupcake and say, who wants this cupcake? And everybody raised their hand, and then they lick it, and they say, now who wants it? And they, what they had inadvertently done is they tied a lot of our worth to our physical status, if you understand what I'm saying. And though I understand the goal that they were trying to emphasize, they placed such a taboo on a physically immoral relationship that they forgot to emphasize that purity isn't about necessarily the physical relationship, but the spiritual being. Because I can be physically pure and morally bankrupt. So as we lead and guide our students, as we lead and guide our children, we have to be sure that we are creating a culture of purity, not a mentality of purity. Because a culture of mentality dictates our actions, dictates our way of life. A mentality forces us to adhere to a set of standards because we have to. So how can we be sure as parents that we are creating a culture of purity? And before I go into this, I want to say, this has been such a burden to me because throughout the course of youth ministry, I cannot tell you the number of students who have come to me who are struggling with immorality, who are struggling with pornography, who are struggling with lust, things that are, and I'm not talking just boys. It is predominantly young men, but statistics show that 60% of young ladies are consistently viewing pornography. And so as we embrace this idea of purity and how we can help our children be pure in a corrupt generation, we have to understand we're competing against a world that is actively trying to corrupt every young person who goes through it. And listen, I'm not trying to be one of these Chicken Littles. The sky is falling, but the sky is falling, and we have to be prepared for it. Listen, I'm in public schools every week, and I cannot tell you how many conversations I have overheard that would make an adult blush. And these children joke about it as if it's harmless and funny. It's appalling. It is. Scary what our children's generations are going to have to face growing up. And I hate to say this, but there are a lot of good parents out there who are raising their children who are not getting pregnant or getting someone pregnant before wedlock, and they're patting themselves on the back saying, man, I did a good job, and when in truth, they did the bare minimum. Listen, we can help our children have a physically pure self, but we should be more concerned about the spiritual self. Because we can control everything, but once that control is gone, then what? So here are some steps, here are some ways that we can help instill a culture of purity into our young person. First of all, we need to give them a desire for greater things. We need to give them a desire for greater things. Especially as we've, you know, my wife and I, we kind of started over with children. You know, we have an 8-year-old, we have a 6-year-old, and now we have a 2-year-old and a 6-month-old. And I forgot how much work little kids are. You know, it was a great idea. Like, yeah, let's have some more. And then we had some more. I was like, wait a minute. This is a lot more work than I thought. I promise you, at least half of my time at home is keeping my son from killing himself. I mean, if the door to the stairs is open, he's going to throw himself down those stairs. If he can climb up on the counter to get his cup, he will, and then he'll jump off that counter. Like, he's intent on hurting. He can now reach the top of the counter, but he can't see what he's reaching for. So if you have a knife or scissors, they have to be at least a foot back from the edge of the countertop, because he'll reach up there and he'll grab it. And it's just, it's fun. It's really fun. I know some of you are like, I'm not a parent. I never want to be one. It's worth it, I promise. But it's reminded me, you know, when you're parenting, you have to replace. I the other day we were in Chipotle, we took a guest speaker out to eat, and I look over and Noah had found a chip under the table, and it was all black. They weren't supposed to be black. The floor was just dirty, and the chip had been dipped in the dirt. So he then decides he wants to eat it, and I catch him as that chip's on his way to his mouth, and I yell at him, stop, and he stops, and I give me the chip, and then I give him another chip. If he's playing with something he shouldn't be playing with, what do? I take it away and give him something he should be playing with, right? When you have a young child, you use that replacement to help them to understand you can't play with this, but you can play with this. And unfortunately, we kind of forget that needs to happen all the way through our parenting. We get real familiar with telling our kids no without giving them an alternative. You know, no, you can't go to that birthday party because I don't know who's there. I don't know what's going on. There are things that are probably going to happen I don't agree with. No. Okay, that's fine. And I'm not saying you always have to do this, but what are you replacing with? You can't go to that youth activity, but I'm sorry, you can't go to that birthday party, but you got a youth activity next week you can go to. I know who's there. I know who's in charge. I know who's in charge, so I'm a little bit skeptical about it. I know who's in charge, so I'm happy to let you go to that. That's the replacement. I'm uncomfortable with that young person. I don't think they're a good friend to you. They're not a good influence. Why don't we have so-and-so over because they're a much better friend? Listen, we have to help our children not just taking things from them, but instead giving them something else so that they can understand. Christianity isn't about no's, it's about doing the right thing. And sometimes the no leads us to the right thing, but if we just say no without showing them that, then we're robbing them of the opportunity. We also have to keep God as the centerfold of our home. If we're going to give them a desire for greater things, God has to be the focus of our home. You're saying, well, we go to church, you're not doing enough. Well, we go to 3 services a week, you're not doing enough. Listen, you don't instill a passion for God in your children by showing them someone else's passion. You instill a passion for God in your children by showing them your passion. How many of your kids root for the same sports team that you root for? How many of your kids have the same interest in the hobbies that you have interest in? It's because you've instilled that passion within them. And unfortunately, a lot of Christians, they like to take their kids to church and think that that's enough to instill a love for God for them. They can see Pastor Jones preach every service of the week, and it's not instilling a real passion for them. They have to be learning it from you. We have tried to do family devotions on a regular basis, and I'm not saying this so I can pat myself on the back as a great dad, but I want my kids to understand that God is the focus of our home. So every night that we're home, if we're home at 7 o'clock, we sit down and we do family devotions. And in those devotions, we just read through a chapter of the Bible. We talk about it together. I hopefully can find some doctrine, and I ask them to make some application. Then we pray using a name of God, and we pray thanking God for an attribute. And we do this not so that I can say, wow, I'm a real good dad. No, I say this because I want my children to grow up passionate about God. And if I'm not living it out, then how are they going to catch it? We must be sure to use the resources that we have. Use the youth group. I am thankful for our youth group. Our youth group has grown rather dramatically in the last year, 6 months to a year. I mean, we went from 40 students in May, and then we were pretty consistently running between 60 and 80. We're still running between 60 and 80 on a Wednesday night. We have about 50 on every Sunday morning. That's awesome. That is exciting to be a part of. In my Bible clubs, I have student leaders that help. And I was talking to a group of our student leaders at Westside. And while we were there, they were talking to me about their youth groups. And they explained they wish they could go to a bigger youth group because their youth group only had 5 to 8, 5 to 10 kids. They wish they could be a part of something bigger. And their statement was, because big youth groups are exciting. Yeah, they are. Our youth group it's a little chaotic, but it's exciting. You walk in there, you're like, okay, you're very likely going to get hit in the head with a ball from somewhere, but it's awesome. It's exciting. Our kids are pumped to be there. And I get a little frustrated sometimes because as I start to preach, it's a little bit of a chore to get them settled down sometimes. And I'm thankful for Cody and Megan Bolt. They have been a big help in there. But I would rather that problem than the alternative, where I am having to coax these kids to show a scrap of excitement. Use the youth group. Within the youth group, there's going to be a lot of opportunity for godly relationships in a Christian environment. That's the whole point. Our youth group is not a daycare for your kids to go to during church. It's not the teenager's nursery. I very intentionally have modeled our youth service identical to our Wednesday night program because I don't want students coming in thinking, this is fun and games and I have to sit through 10 minutes of a sermon in order to play fun and games. That's not it. We come in, we sing a couple songs, we have a prayer time, we sing another song, then we start our service. And we play the games before, we play the games after, and it's awesome. I love that. And I've done it intentionally. And recently I had some pushback from somebody I respected greatly asking me, do you really think that no games during your service, do you think that's helpful? Yeah, I think it's helpful. And I could be totally wrong. And you may totally disagree with me. And when you're a youth pastor, you can do it different. But until then, I want to keep doing it this way because I don't want kids graduating from our youth group thinking, well, this is no fun. I don't want to go to church. It's boring. You have to focus. You have to listen. You have to learn. And that's how we grow in our Christian life. And so that's why we do these things. Our youth activities. Our youth activities are intentionally modeled to provide opportunity for relationship. We create memories, and through memories, develop relationships. Through relationships, we create influence. If our kids are hanging out with good Christian students on a regular basis, it's going to provide an opportunity for influence. Students influence each other immensely. How many of you, your kids, have wanted you to buy them a $150 pair of shoes for no other reason than everybody else has them? I'm seeing them all over the place. I'm like, are those new shoes? Yeah, they're $200. You're wearing them playing 9 square in the mud. Stop wearing your $200 shoes to play in the mud, okay? Why are they doing that? Because students influence students. And if we can create an atmosphere, a culture, where our teens are encouraging each other in their Bible reading, encouraging each other in their church attendance, then we are going to see them grow in immense ways. It's something that I've battled with, but I like to do. I like to encourage our students to look around, see who's missing, and text them. I've had students in Wednesday night church say, hey, so-and-so's not here. I want to text them and shame them. Okay, great, do it. And they did. And they're like, hey, why are you being a bum? You should be a youth group. And that's awesome. And I know maybe we shouldn't guilt people to going to church, but if it's the only way to get them there, let's do it. Your youth group is a huge opportunity for influence. If you have, and with that being said, as our youth group has grown, that doesn't mean everybody in the youth group is spiritually minded. just because they're hanging out with a kid from church doesn't necessarily mean it's a great relationship. If you have concerns about it, come talk to me. Please, I would be happy to talk about it with you. Because I see these things. I see students who are hanging out with each other who are probably not the best influences for each other. And this isn't a fault on your parenting. This isn't saying that you aren't doing the job that you're supposed to do. If your student shouldn't hang out with his other student, kids make their own choices and they have to grow eventually. But we have to be the ones who are steering that ship. Look for help. Talk to their teachers. Talk to their youth pastor. Look for somebody who's going to help give you advice on your children's friends. Also, look for opportunities to spend time with your children's friends. Phil Hall brought this up to me, sometime last year. But we've got family game nights planned in our youth calendar. I think our next one's actually in March. And I really want to make an emphasis of this. This is a great opportunity for you to come to the youth group and see and hang out with your kids' friends. Hang out with your kids' friends' parents. Because that's a big deal. There are homes that my children will not go to without me being there. Not because I think their parents are terrible. I just don't know them. There are homes that I will send my kids to spend the weekend, and that's awesome. Why? Because I know them. And the best way that we can be sure our children are getting the proper influences are by spending time with their friends and spending time with their friends' families. This family game night, I know you may not be a board game person. If that's not you, then don't feel obligated to come. But if you're looking for an opportunity to get to know who your kids are hanging out with, this is a great way to do it, and I'm looking forward to this opportunity. All right, I think we've got two of those planned this year. Also, explain yourself to your children. In the replacement, if we're going to replace the bad with the good, then our kids need to know why. There is a time and a place for because I told you so parenting. But if it is used as a weapon to exert your authority and dominance over your children, it is not helpful to anyone. There are times for it. There are times you have to look at your child and say, listen, I need you to do this because I told you to. I'm not going to explain myself. You have to trust that I know it's best. That's absolutely within your rights. But if you feel that you should never have to explain yourself to your children, then you are not helping your children grow. It is not a helpful thing. Explain yourself to them. Hey, way we've done it in our home is when I tell my children to do something, they have to obey, but they're allowed to come back later and ask why. After they obey, then they can say, Dad, why did I have to do that? And I'm happy to explain that. It does two things. It removes the emotion from it, because a lot of times they're emotional and they're upset that they have to do something they don't want to do. I don't know about you guys. I have a daughter that is one of the most emotional beings in the world, and she's only 8 years old. She's just like me in every aspect, except she's emotional, and I don't quite know how to handle it. This morning, I walked out of the bedroom, and she's sitting on the couch, and she's in tears. Why are you crying? Because we have to go to church, and I can't finish. She was like crocheting or knitting a pot holder. You know this? And she said, I can't finish my pot holder. We're coming home after church. Like, you will have time to do this eventually. Yeah, but I want to finish. Stop crying. Stop. Like, I don't quite know how to handle all the emotion. But what I can say is that when either of us is emotional, it's not the time to ask why. But when later she comes back to me and she says, Dad, why did I have to do that? Then it allows me to say, you had to do this because these are the reasons. And it helps us both. It helps her understand I'm not just this tyrant who expects everything from her. I am her loving dad who wants to help her grow and develop. And then it helps me understand I have to have reasons behind what I do. And that's a good thing for a parent to realize. Secondly, don't trust your kids. Don't trust your kids. I know that sounds weird, but I mean it. I have been in youth ministry long enough to tell you the kids who cause the most problems are the kids whose parents trust them. I hope you understand what I'm saying. You can trust your kids to a level, but there should always be that trust but verify program. Listen, I have, there are students in our youth group that I know I can trust to do things. I know I can ask them to get something done, and they will be on top of it. There are other students that I have to ask to do something, and I know it won't happen. Hey, did you talk to your parents? Oh, I'll do it next week. No. Do it now. Do it today. Okay. Next time I see them, hey, did you talk to your parents? Oh, I've been chasing one student. They registered for camp last night. I've been chasing them since November to get registered. Ask them on a weekly basis. It finally worked because I called their grandma, and their grandma got them registered. That trust but verify, right? When it comes to our children, we have to understand that they are our kids. Their brains aren't developed. They're characterized by bad decisions. One of the most regrettable experiences of this I've had as a youth pastor. So I had a group of young men in my youth group, really close friends, not very good influences on each other. And I found out that on Fridays and Saturday nights, on a regular basis, they were sneaking out of the house and joyriding around town. So, of course, as a youth pastor should, or any adult should that finds out about this, I went to their parents. I went to the mom. I said, hey, I've heard this is going on. I thought you should know about it. And she said, well, if I've done my job right, I shouldn't have to worry about what they're doing. Yeah, not a great mentality. I mean, yes, I see what you're saying, but it's not a great mentality. 3 weeks later, these young men were in a car accident where they wrapped their car around a tree. Thankfully, all four of them walked away from it. And what they did is they walked home that night, got into bed, never told their parents what happened until the next morning. And I cannot tell you with evidence, but I am confident they were drinking. 16, 17-year-old young men sneaking home after wrecking a car is not because they were worried their mom and dad would be mad about the car accident. I am convinced they were drinking. You can say, I trust my children, I should be doing everything right. Yes, but trust, but verify. Your child's phone is one of the most dangerous things we can ever hand our children. And I am amazed by the flippancy that a lot of parents have about it. Well, you know, they know I can check it whenever I want. Okay, do you? Well, you know, I used to be real consistent. That's not good. That's not good enough. I know who my kids are hanging out with. Okay, have you spent time with them? No, but they told me they're good kids. Yeah. When's the last time you trusted a 14-year-old boy's opinion on anything? Listen, I know this sounds so dogmatic, but I mean it to be. Your kids, as good as they may be, are sinners who cannot be trusted. Check their phone often, like daily, if not weekly. Have their phone locked down to where they can't download apps. Have a filter device. I cannot stress this enough. Have a filter device on your kids' phones, boys or girls. It doesn't matter. Have a filter on. I know they cost money, but if we're willing to pay for our Hulu subscription or our Netflix subscription, we should be willing to pay for Covenant Eyes or Watchdog or whatever app you find that works for your family. It's worth it. It's worth the investment. Check their texts. Check who they're talking to. Read what they're talking to. I think some of us would be appalled by the things our children are talking about in group texts. Check them. Check their phones. Know their friends. Be aware of their entertainment. Your child should not have a separate Netflix account from your own. Even if it's a little, you know, one of those little icons, they should be watching. You should be well aware of whatever they're watching. In fact, this is my opinion. This is totally up to me. Your opinion may differ. I don't let my children watch anything I haven't watched myself personally, or I'm not sitting there watching with them myself. Unfortunately, I let them watch A Strange World. There's a newer Disney movie. It came out on Disney Plus. It's a new movie. And his dad, can we watch this? Sure. I let them watch it. I came in probably 30, 45 minutes later, and I sat down and realized that they have a homosexual main character, teenage boy who's talking about his crush on another boy. This stuff is appalling, and it's everywhere. One of the most popular TV shows for students for a while was a show called Outer Banks. It's a show centered around high school students who are doing drugs, drinking, having immoral relationships, and really behaving completely against the Bible. But it had a good storyline, so parents were okay with letting their kids watch it. Listen, that's not okay. We as parents must be aware of what our students are doing. Lastly, enlist allies and resources. You are not alone. You are not alone as a parent. You have people who will want to help you. You have a church family. You have teachers in school. And unfortunately, a lot of times, parents can view teachers as the villains because that teacher's mean to my kid. There can be some of that. I get it. But go talk to the teachers. Ask them what's going on. Try to figure out what the problem is. And if it's something that needs to be addressed, then address it. If it's not, then leave it alone. There have been times that all of our kids have been treated unfairly, right? There have been times that our kids come home and say, the teacher gave me detention and I didn't deserve it. And they did actually, this time, they didn't actually deserve it. But it's not the end of the world if our kids have to put up with a little bit of mistreatment. In fact, it's probably helpful to them. But talk to their parents. I'm sorry, talk to the teachers. Talk to the youth pastor. Talk to the pastor. You have allies. You have resources. Use, and I can't, again, this is in my notes the second time because I can't emphasize it enough. Use filters. Put a filter on your child's phone. If you allow them to have a browser, it should be filtered. And it is wrong for us to allow our kids to have access to so much information without us being aware of what they're looking at. I got one more. Speak candidly and often about these things. Have conversations with your kids about purity. Physically, spiritually, have conversations with them because it's uncomfortable and it forces you to sit down and ask questions that may make the both of you uncomfortable. But if they feel liberty to come talk to you about things, it's going to keep them from talking to their friends about it. It's going to keep them from looking it up on the internet. It's going to help them. It's going to help you protect them. Raising pure children in an impure world, though a difficult challenge, is not impossible. It just demands vigilance. It demands constant awareness. And I know how exhausting that is. I mean, again, I'm trying to keep my two-year-old alive. He wants to throw himself downstairs, grab fire, grab his mom's curling iron or whatever it is that he wants to grab. And constantly I'm having to say, where's Noah? What's Noah doing? It gets quiet in the house for 10 seconds. Alarm bells start going off. That's what happened. Last week it got real quiet in the house. And with my older girls, they get quiet. They'll play. I don't know. Girls and boys are different. My girls will play Legos or color for hours without noise. And then we have a son, and he has one volume, and it's as loud as it can possibly go. Like, he's just, like, talking, and he's yelling. So it gets quiet in the house, and I'm like, what's going on? And so I go to find Noah, and I find him. He's got the dog's toy, and he's dunking it in the toilet. And then as I walk in, he's putting it to his mouth. Stop trying to kill yourself. That vigilance, though it changes as our kids grow up, it should never wane. And I think a lot of us, as our kids get older, we think, all right, I don't have to do as much. They can dress themselves. He's not trying to throw himself down the stairs. I don't have to worry about as much. There's still a lot to worry about. And truthfully, it gets scarier as they get older. And I don't say this, again, I don't want to be the Chicken Little who's running around, the sky is falling. But listen, we are combating a world that is bent on corrupting our children. And if we aren't vigilant, we will fail.